with Jenna Ellis. This is our AFR exclusive podcast where we get to do a deep dive into the issues that you care about. And so if you have an issue idea or a guest or a question that you would like us to cover on this show, you can always reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net. And several of you have written in, and what great timing, asking what's going on in Israel, the state of the world right now, especially as we get into some of the eschatology questions that are related to Revelation and some of these things about prophecy in Israel. And the latest, of course, coming from the Wall Street Journal, Israel and Hamas near a ceasefire deal to return hostages. So this coming on Wednesday from the Wall Street Journal, Israel and Hamas are finalizing the terms of a ceasefire deal, raising hopes of an agreement that would at least pause the fighting in the Gaza Strip and free some of the hostages held there. Negotiators, including President-elect Donald Trump's designated Middle East envoy, along with officials from the U.S., Israel, and Arab countries, met midday in Qatar to finalize a draft deal, said the Arab officials who are helping to mediate the talks. So this is interesting, and of course is likely because of the imminent return of President Trump to the Oval Office. So I want to welcome in my good friend Josh Hammer, who does a lot. He is a senior editor for Newsweek. He hosts his own show, and he's also a prolific author. And this is a great conversation to have today because his brand new book, it will be released March 18th, and I'm sure that it is available for pre-order now through all of the major retailers. It's called Israel and Civilization, The Fate of the Jewish Nation and the Destiny of the West. What an incredible title. Josh, I'm so excited to read this. Welcome to the show. And before we get into the book, I'd love your take on where things are at with Israel, especially with President Trump getting inaugurated on Monday.
Well, Jenna, always delighted to join you, and I look forward to a great conversation today. Look, the current deal that is rapidly taking place, I'm not going to put lipstick on a pig, so to speak. It's not a particularly great deal, based on what I can tell. Having said that, there are a lot of unknowns here. And among those unknowns, I suppose, are the following. For short-term, near-term purposes, one of the major unknowns is how many of the hostages that Hamas is allegedly releasing under this deal, how many of them are even alive? I'm not even sure that we know the answer to that. So the rumor is that Hamas is apparently going to release somewhere between 30 and 40 of the estimated roughly 100 to 120 or so remaining hostages there. We genuinely do not even know how many of them still have a pulse, or versus how many of them are just going to be dead bodies. That's a very difficult intelligence thing to try to verify. We're dealing here, of course, with a terrorist organization with Hamas. You cannot exactly take these people at their word, to put it mildly. So if they deliver 33 dead bodies in exchange for 1,000 or potentially up to 3,000 radical Palestinian Arab jihadists and terrorists, that starts to look like a pretty bad deal. But I think the more important question, and this is really kind of the way that I am judging this deal, is let's see what happens, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks from now. So I think that Hamas and Al Jazeera, which is the Qatari-sponsored television that is pro-Muslim Brotherhood, pro-Hamas, a lot of that sort of media and that sliver of the world, they're going to be calling this a tremendous victory for Hamas, because they are going to be saying that Israel and the IDF are going to be withdrawing from the Gaza Strip. That remains to be determined. I'm not entirely sure that that is exactly what is going to happen here. So put another way, I think what's actually going on, Jenna, is that Donald Trump wants to come into office on January 20th, this coming Monday, and he wants to be able to say that he got a major win, that he got a huge release of hostages. I think he wants his Ronald Reagan moment. I mean, Jimmy Carter just passed away a few weeks ago. Let's not forget that Jimmy Carter presided over a 400-plus day hostage crisis at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran after the Islamic Revolution. And then the Ayatollah Khomeini, he released all the American hostages on day one of the Reagan administration. I think that Donald Trump is going for that kind of optic. That's basically what he wants here. Donald Trump is a businessman. He's a showman. He likes the optics. That's what he's going for. That doesn't necessarily mean, though, that he's going to prevent the Netanyahu government and the IDF from going back into Gaza to finish the job against Hamas, you know, be it 2, 3, 4 weeks from now. So that that, to me, is the real question. If it takes that off the table, then it is an emphatically bad deal. We should not mince words about it. But if it leaves the possibility of finishing the job against Hamas in Gaza on the table, then I think that this is tolerable if it does give Donald Trump that day one victory, as long as it preserves the possibility of finishing the job against Hamas.
Yeah, a really great analysis. And, you know, you mentioned all of this is kind of in the short term, and we've been seeing I think analyzing Israel in sort of the short term, but in this broader conflict and I think biblical context is where your book comes in. And I want to get to that because, you know, while we're focused just on kind of the foreign policy and what's going on right now, your book takes a broader look at this and the destiny of the West that is, of course, centrally tied to Israel and the Judeo-Christian heritage that began with the nation of Israel. So how does your book address, the broader historical perspective, but then what's going on even currently?
Sure. So the book, once again, Jen, it's called Israel and Civilization, The Fate of the Jewish Nation and the Destiny of the West. It's available for pre-order on Amazon or wherever you go ahead and place your pre-orders. We're going to be having an audiobook as well, but right now you can pre-order it on hardcover or Kindle, whatever you prefer. It really does, in the book, we cover a lot of terrain. And there are multiple chapters in the book on contemporary foreign policy. I have a whole chapter on what I think modern U.S.-Israel relations should look like and why I think a realist foreign policy is not only reconcilable with close U.S.-Israel relations, but actually is the preferred foreign policy paradigm through which U.S.-Israel relations can flourish. This is kind of an old misunderstanding. I think a lot of people, including some folks in certain pockets of the right, maybe even, some folks have historically attributed a lot of U.S. involvement in toppling Saddam Hussein and Afghanistan and all these various foreign wars. There's kind of this trope, which at times kind of has a tinge of anti-Semitism, where a lot of people start saying, oh, you know, the U.S. is fighting Israel's wars for it. But that's actually not right at all. The entire idea of neoconservatism is actually something of an American phenomenon. And really, when it comes to kind of tangible, hard-headed realism, you know, the Abraham Accords peace deals that Donald Trump was able to ink in his first term in office, and God willing, we'll see similar diplomatic successes in his second term. That really is kind of the prudential, sober, hard-headed realist paradigm through which U.S.-Israel relations, I think, can flourish. So all of that contemporary stuff is in there, but the first few chapters of the book really start quite literally at Mount Sinai, actually. That's where chapter two of the book starts, and I basically argue, Jenna, in the book, that all that we today call quote-unquote Western civilization is downstream of God's revelation to the ancient Israelites there with Moses at Mount Sinai, because it is the Bible, it is our biblical inheritance that is the West. Now, there are other components of the West, of course, as well. I'm not going to necessarily completely dismiss things that the ancient Greeks did and the Romans did, but it really is ultimately, it really does begin there with the Bible. And above all, what I argue in the book, Jenna, I think this is a crucial point for both the biblical religions, both Judaism and Christianity, I think that it is crucial to emphasize, as I do repeatedly in the book, that to me the single foundational principle of Western civilization is Genesis 1:27. In Hebrew, we would call it B'Tselem Elohim, the notion that man is made in the image of God, male and female, he created them. You know, a lot of people kind of chalk up modern American constitutional or various other legal proclamations of equality, you know, whether, Jenna, you're a lawyer, I'm a lawyer. So we're talking about the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. You know, I think a lot of people might be tempted to attribute that to Thomas Jefferson writing the Declaration of Independence, or maybe John Locke writing over in England a century and a half before that there. But no, it actually all gets back to Genesis 1:27. This is the foundational principle. And the book kind of goes on and on talking about how various other biblical principles. There is the famous reference in the book of Jeremiah to focus on the welfare of your local city. That's kind of ultimately how you get to federalism, frankly, and its antecedents in European countries. And there's just all sorts of other examples as well there. And I wrote this book in the broader context of the Hamas massacre of October 7th and the horrific skyrise and just escalation of anti-Semitism on America's college campuses, but frankly also just worldwide as well. And I really wrote this book as somewhat of a call to arms to basically say, okay, look, we here in the West are facing a lot of threats today. And in the book, I identify three threats that seek to ultimately subjugate and destroy us. And in no particular order, those threats are wokeism, Islamism, and global neoliberalism. Global neoliberalism basically being Davos, the UN, Brussels, the homogenizing impulse that basically seeks to eradicate differences. Think of it as kind of John Lennon's Imagine, basically, on a world stage. So all of these, the John Lennon Imagine, globalism, Islamism, and wokeism, all of these are ultimately, in their own right, I think, existential threats to the West and our biblical inheritance. So what this moment calls for, Jenna, is a biblically fortified Jewish-Christian alliance to appreciate our heritage, to double down, triple down, and quadruple down on where we come from, and to be confident in our vision, in our superiority of our way of life. That will inspire us with the strength and the confidence, I think, to ward off these threats and to preserve our great inheritance.
So well said, Josh Hammer. And what an excellent point that I just want to underscore is that so many people view America and American exceptionalism as if the founders had these ideas of freedom and liberty and justice and truth and morality and all of these great principles and protections for the rights and the laws of nature and of nature's God, all of these things, as if they were the first ones to think of this, and that these were new concepts in our Constitution. And while they may have been new in a sense of how they were enshrined in our Constitution and in that aspect of Western civilization, you're absolutely right that these concepts were derived from the Bible itself and from the long line of history that these men studied, not only in law and policy, but also theology. And this is where I think if people who are listening, and I know our listenership is very much ardently patriotic, America first, but also Christian, they need to understand that that's not just an intersection. In order to be a true patriot and to genuinely want to advance America first policies and also why we support Israel, I mean, all of these things, it starts first with good theology and understanding the Bible and understanding where these principles and concepts were derived. And that's where I think your book is so important in connecting those dots and explaining why America absolutely needs to be pro-Israel, but also why these concepts are centrally focused on Western civilization thriving and surviving because of the predicate, which is the biblical worldview.
Very well said, Jen. And I guess I would kind of also emphasize one thing as well, kind of bringing it back into the modern age, into current times here. So I was talking just a few minutes ago about this three-headed hydra of existential threats that we in the West face, Jews and Christians alike. And these threats are wokeism, Islamism, and global neoliberalism. And I would like to suggest that the state of Israel, the modern state of Israel, is the canary in the coal mine when it comes to really all three of these issues, actually. But I wanted to focus actually on the global neoliberalism part. So basically what I argue in this portion of the book is that the globalists, the George Soroses of the world, and yes, you can criticize George Soros without being anti-Semitic, just to clarify, I do it all the time. the George Soroses of the world, the Davos people, their ultimate goal is to eradicate national borders. This is the entire actual goal of the Open Society Foundation, of these various transnational institutions there. But the Western tradition, in modern times, we would call it the Westphalian nation state after the Peace of Westphalia there after the 30 Years' War in the mid-17th century. But the entire idea of a nation state, Jenna, as opposed to an empire, as opposed to kind of a blob that is ever seeking to expand there, the entire notion of clearly defined borders, what was the first nation state in the world? Ancient Israel. It was biblical Israel. It was when King David unified ancient Israel there in Jerusalem. I argue in the book that the political ideal of a nation state as compared with empire goes back to Israel. The biblical model of the nation state can be contrasted, for instance, with the Roman Empire model. So you have nation state versus empire, and in many ways, kind of imperialism and empire is kind of the predecessor to modern day globalism, which again seeks to eradicate all borders and seek to homogenize us, which is deeply, deeply dangerous for people of faith, because they're ultimately going to make all of us, Jew and Christian alike, make all of us bend the knee to their modern day wokeism and their terrible ideas, their terrible theology, and so forth there. So with all that being said, I think it is imperative on those who appreciate the importance of the nation state as well to go all in for Israel, because Israel is the first nation state that ever existed. And it is a very nationalist enterprise today, of course. There is conscription in the military. Anyone who's ever met an Israeli can tell you that nationalism is very strong over in Israel there. So if you want to protect the nation state model, which conservatives, Jews, Christians, traditionalists here in America absolutely should, the nation state is a good thing. This is one thing that Donald Trump gets emphatically, emphatically correct. If you believe in the integrity and the importance of the nation state, then you really have to go all in for the world's first ever nation state, which is Israel.
Absolutely. And again, this is why this book is so important. It's titled Israel and Civilization, The Fate of the Jewish Nation and the Destiny of the West. The author is my special guest today, Josh Hammer. And this is now available for pre-order through all major retailers. And Josh, we were talking especially leading up to the 2024 election, that literally the fate of America and America as the shining city on the hill and the beacon of freedom and liberty, that the fate of the West also may be in peril. And thankfully, Donald Trump won that election, and we have a reprieve, as it were, to really get things right over the next 4 years. What do you think are the most important things to get right in terms of the destiny of the West, as we're sitting here in America and need to be, for all the reasons you just described, pro-Israel? What are the things that people concretely should be focused on when we're talking about the destiny of the West?
Well, look, I mean, in very, very concrete current circumstances there, that sentiment to root for the West over our would-be oppressors simply has to translate into all-out support for Israel in its current seven-front war. I mean, people forget about the fact that Israel is quite literally in a seven-front war right now. They are fighting Hamas in Gaza. They are fighting Hezbollah still in Lebanon. Despite that ceasefire deal, Hezbollah flagrantly violates it. There are still all sorts of terror shenanigans going on there in southern Lebanon. Arguably the hottest front at the moment is actually Judea and Samaria, what the world refers to as the quote-unquote West Bank, but what people of the Bible would refer to as Judea and Samaria. That is a very hot front right now. Iran is trying to smuggle in all sorts of weapons there to try to foment jihadist activity there in Jenin and Nablus, Ramallah, places like that right there in the biblical heartland. Then there's, of course, Syria and Iraq, which are hot playing fields as well. Syria is in flux right now, given the toppling of Assad a little over a month ago, but Iraq remains basically just an Iranian province to this day. Then there's the Houthis in Yemen, which America, the UK, Israel, all of which have been striking recently. The Houthis are still blowing up commercial vessels in the Red Sea and just generally posing a massive risk to global trade at the moment. And then there's the head of the snake itself, which is the Iranian regime, which is ultimately the source of the great majority of the jihadist evil that currently exists in the Middle East. So, look, I think that Jews, Christians, conservatives, people who support a biblical worldview, people who support the nation state, people who basically are just rooting for the West in general against all of our enemies there, you really have to go all in and basically just let Israel do its thing, frankly, when it comes to fighting off these mutual enemies. And in the book, it's not like I call for America to do Israel's dirty work for it. On the contrary, this is somewhat of an anti-Semitic a notion. A lot of people say, again, oh, Israel gets America to do their war. No, there's actually not a single Israeli leader that I've ever identified in the entire history of the modern Jewish state that has ever asked for a foreigner to fight Israel's wars for it. The entire purpose of modern Zionism, the entire purpose of Jewish self-determination in the Jews' ancestral biblical homeland, is that the Jews fight their own wars for them. It's right there in the opening line of Psalm 144. Put my hand on the trigger, prepare me for war. It's right there. It's right there in the biblical worldview. But you have to support Israel. You have to let them do their thing. So no more Biden-Harris administration-style shenanigans when it comes to threatening to say we're going to sanction you or we're going to penalize you if you don't finish the job ASAP and get the heck out of Gaza or Lebanon there. None of that. And the other thing that I look forward to, which I alluded to earlier, hopefully in a second Trump term, would be the expansion of the Abraham Accords circle of peace. So that was one of Trump's greatest achievements, either foreign or domestic, from his first term. He was able to bring the UAE, Bahrain, Morocco, and Sudan, although Sudan's a somewhat complicated country, but he brought all four of them into formal peace with Israel. And the big diplomatic question in this second Trump term is whether or not they will be able to add the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which is really the most important Muslim country in the world. It seems like Mohammed bin Salman, the young, precocious crown prince in Riyadh, it seems like he is interested in joining the Abraham Accords. It's just a question as to whether or not all sides can get a final deal on the table there. That is a major, major pressing diplomatic priority, and hopefully it succeeds. Albeit, I will put one caveat on that. If it comes at the expense of giving away the biblical heartland of Judea and Samaria to create a new Palestinian terror state, that strikes me as a bad deal. But anything less than that is an absolute diplomatic necessity.
So well said. And Josh, I always appreciate your commentary so much. I mean, you give so many great insights and good information and a very well-rounded view on not only the current state of things, but also where we've come from and the history of all of this. And of course, the biblical worldview perspective and our Judeo-Christian heritage that the West absolutely needs to preserve. So I'm really excited about your book, Israel and Civilization, The Fate of the Jewish Nation and the Destiny of the West. So thank you so much for your commentary today and joining me for this deeper dive on demand. And as I've said to listeners, if you have a topic, if you have a question, if you have a guest that you'd like to hear from, you can always reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net. And we will weekly address those questions and do these deeper dives here on demand. So looking forward to that next week. You can always reach the podcast anywhere podcasts are disseminated or also at AFR.net.